All right, so we're in 1 Thessalonians. Believe, become, belong, behave. So let's start with a couple things that we can agree on and start as a foundation. So how many of you can just raise your hand, think that friends are an important part of your life? Friends. Okay. How many of you think teachers have been and should be an important part of your life? Yeah, if my wife was here, both hands would go up and both feet. Yeah, she would. And then this one, you might not get as many hands raised. How many of you feel that having a spiritual father or mother is an important and necessary part of your life? Okay. So that one we have to think about, and I won't embarrass anybody by saying, and how many of you have that or don't have that? Because if we talk about friends, okay, most of us have friends. So I want to compare and contrast for a minute, and then we'll get to our text, okay? So if you think of a friend is somebody that you enjoy their company, they enjoy your company. You may have some interests in common, but a friend is there to encourage you and for you to enjoy each other. They don't too often step into the role of a teacher, maybe once in a while, and they don't too often become a spiritual mother or father. Okay? Now, there's some interesting differences between men and women. So there are acquaintances. Okay, that's people you know and you see on a somewhat regular basis. But once you start into the friend category, and I'm not going to do a whole teaching on this, so, you know, don't tune me out. There's like 5 levels of friendship, okay? Ladies usually have people in all 5 categories. I'll explain why in a minute. Men, most of them are in category 1 or 2. And they probably only have 1 or 2 friends. Okay, guys, is that true? One of the differences is that men are very busy being the provider and the protector, so they don't have the time or the energy to build a friendship. But it's also because we are problem solvers. And so when we're chatting with somebody, an acquaintance that may be becoming a friend, if we, either of us, would happen to share something we're going through, then it would turn into, well, this is what you need to do to get through that. So most of guys' friendships are, how about that team? Can you believe so-and-so traded so-and-so? And I can't even give you any examples because I don't have those conversations. And I've been behind that team for 20 years, and now this year they're not going to win the pennant or whatever it is they're winning. The Super Bowl. Okay? And so that really, you can have a friendship there, but that's a fairly shallow area of friendship. Or it could be that you like to hunt or fish. Well, you do realize, ladies, that when you go out hunting and fishing, you have to be quiet because you don't want to scare the fish. You don't want to scare the game. So that is not, let's go out and hang out and talk all day. That's, let's go out, I'll walk over here and hunt, and you go over there and hunt, and we'll go over there and fish, and then I'll see you in 4 or 5 hours. But I was out with my friend today. Okay? See, guys, friendships are different. Now, ladies, on the other hand, they can sit down and tell each other anything going on in their lives, and the other lady will not try to solve their problems. The other lady will say, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, or, you know, I went through that myself, so I have empathy. And so their friendships just keep getting deeper and deeper. Us guys were, yeah. And then we get married, so now you have a problem solver, and you have a lady who just wants to share about her day. So when we first got married, she said, oh, I'm having such a struggle trying to get all my work done. And, you know, she had been in the college scene for years, and so that was not doing the cooking and the cleaning and all of that. And I thought, oh, she's asking for my organizational help. So I made her a chart and put it on the fridge. Honey, you don't have to wait till Friday and do every job you have to do. This is what you do on Mondays. This is what you do on Tuesdays. So I'll tell you how thrilled she was about that idea. Behind my back, she went and talked to Paul and Thelma. What am I to do with this guy I married who thinks he needs to schedule and control my whole life? And their advice was, you pray and ask God to change. That's unfair, Thelma. So, even in marriage, it's hard to build a deep friendship because we're so different. Okay, so friends are an exciting part of our life now. And one way you can tell a friend from an acquaintance is you may not see that friend for years, but when you do, you feel like you're immediately reconnected. That's a friend. Okay. So then teachers. Okay. So teachers aren't necessarily interested in being their students' friends. They would like to get along with them, right, teacher? You'd like to get along with your students, but you don't necessarily want to be considered a friend. So it's not about common interests. It's not about sharing what's going on in your life. But that does happen. But teachers want you to learn and take knowledge that will help improve your life and that kind of thing. Okay? So we all want friends. We all need teachers. When Jesus went from village to village, he did three things. It said that he preached the good news, the gospel. He taught them. And he did signs, wonders, and miracles. Every place he went, those were the three things he did. So here we have Paul, and Paul is describing to us a little bit about how he's relating to each of the churches that he visits. In some towns, he actually established the churches. In others, when he arrived, there was a group of believers that met down at the creek, river, okay, and depending on where you're from, right, southerner. And so in others he went and he established elders and pastors. When you read just his writings, you'd think, wow, he's really not a friendly kind of guy. You know, he just says, this is what you need to fix and you better fix it before I show up. But then he tells you when he comes in person, he's different. I'm somewhat that way. When I write emails or those kind of things, who writes letters anymore? But text messages, emails, you know, people can say, well, I wasn't sure what your attitude was behind that. Well, you have to know me to know what the attitude was behind that. Because I try to be precise and to the point. Probably because I didn't have hours to think about what I wanted to say. Plus, I wanted to just get to the point. And so Paul describes for us what it was like when he arrived. Did he arrive as a friend? No. Did he arrive as a teacher? Not according to him. So we are in 1st Thessalonians. That can be a little bit of a tongue twister if you say it too fast. Chapter 2. Eight through 11. Having so fond an affection for you. That doesn't seem like somebody who's harsh. Fond affection for you. we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel, okay, so he shared the gospel, but also our own lives. Okay, he was somewhat open and friendly, because you'd become very dear to us. That's interesting that this missionary apostle comes and he explains that the churches have become very dear to him. For you, we recall, brethren, our labor and hardship, how working day and night. So he was bivocational. When he showed up, he didn't say, hey, I'm here to train you and raise up leaders, and at the end of the week, I want a $1,000 honorarium. It said he did his work. And he worked day and night while he was there. So as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we, behaved toward you who believe. Just as you know how we were exhorting, encouraging, and imploring each of you, now he describes what he was. As a father would his own children. So he came to them as a father. The word tells us, church, you have many teachers. Okay, all you have to do is turn on the television. We have many national teachers. But you have very few fathers. Okay, part of that is, any of you that are fathers, and we have two over here that have three kids each, so I'll address the fathers and the mothers, that is just so easy to do. Yeah, no? Frank, was it easy with your three girls? It was just a piece of cake. It was so easy. And Laura didn't give you any problems. It was just easy. Oh, it was all Sarah. It was her fault. Yeah. I'm still finding out things about my girls that I didn't know. Oh, didn't we ever tell you, Dad? I'm glad I didn't know. So first of all, it's difficult to say, yeah, I'm going to father a group of people. But also because many of us don't like having to be parented as adults. Yes. Ouch. And he gives us three things he did as a father to them. And that's where we're going today. Okay? The first one was exhorting. The word there means came alongside of to implore you. For you, okay? To keep going beyond where or how you thought you could go. That's what exhorting is. So I'm not going to yell from a distance, okay? Kurt, you need to get off your butt and stop doing this. I come alongside and I say, hey, Pastor Kurt, I really want to join with you and help you get to where God wants you to go. Exhorting. So fathers exhort. Fathers, spiritual fathers and spiritual mothers exhort. Encouraging. Very similar word. To come alongside. See? So both of these are come alongside. And let you know that you can get through this. That things will get better. This is only for a season. Do you know why spiritual fathers and mothers can say that? Because they've had a number of seasons in their life when they were going through things that they thought they'd never get through to get to the end of. But they did. So they can come to you now and say, this very difficult thing you're going through is a season. At some point, maybe not next week, maybe not September, but at some point, you're going to be able to look through and say, that's in my path. That's over here. I made it through that difficult time. That's another thing spiritual mothers and fathers do for us. The third word is one we don't use too often. It means charge, not like charge card. Charge like give you an assignment to accomplish. Or implore. The definition there is to give you all the facts. Okay, so there is some teaching. Give you all the information you need. Remember, truth sets us free. So explain what is true and what isn't. Then let you know that you are now responsible to respond and use what you now know. Okay? So if you didn't know that 233 Centerville Road changes speed limits 5 times between Colonel Denning and Pine Grove, and I live on 233, and so every mile I have to think, okay, what speed zone am I in? But if a policeman pulls me over and I'm in the 35 and I'm going 55, because there is a section that's 55, and I'm going to say, oh, I didn't know. Yeah, is he going to buy that? I should have known because I probably was singing, not paying attention, thinking about what I'm going to do when I get to wherever I'm going. And so, bingo! So that word means we've given you some new information. Now use that information. That's imploring or charging. Spiritual fathers and mothers do that. So these three things that they do help us to mature, help us to move forward. And we don't always like that, do we? All right. So fathers, our physical earthly ones, our heavenly father, and spiritual fathers and mothers help us make necessary choices, changes, and decisions. Van reminded us last Sunday that changes and leaving the past in the past is difficult to do. It is. Because we all like what's common, what's normal, what we've gotten comfortable to and with, and we don't really want to change. I can be the first person to put my hand up. I like knowing a routine, doing the routine. The last 3 years of my life have been anything but that. Anything but that. So I went back into the business realm. I learned a new job that now got discontinued. And now I have to learn another new job at a new location. I was thinking, can an old dog learn new tricks? So all kinds of things changing. My father passed away. And so it's been interesting changes. Adam and Becky recently had a change. Becky's job got moved from Carlisle to Harrisburg as well. And Adam already travels to Camp Hill every day. Well, they live hither and thon, or did, over here on Windy Hill Road, which, believe me, is windy, and it's a hill. It is the iciest spot in Newville in the winter. Yeah, cars are all over the road. Yeah, and then you decide to come down the hill instead of try to go up the hill. That's even worse. Yeah, so, but they needed to move. Well, again, for us guys, those kind of things aren't quite as big of a change as they are to the ladies. But I know it was difficult for Becky because they moved there when Aiden was 2, maybe 2. And they had the other two kids there. So that's where she raised the babies. So for me, now I'm going to have to just try to zip through this. You know, when I get on certain subjects, I struggle getting it out. But if I don't allow my emotions to catch up with my mouth, I can get through it. So we're going to try this. So I had some very precious memories in that house as well. Number one, because since the time the boys had been 6 weeks old, I've been one of their caregivers. So I've been there, and I have memories with them there. Okay. So, but the toughest one is the fact that every Tuesday, when I had the boys in the morning, the whole way through his cancer treatments, Dad and Mom would come up. And I'd be with the boys, and they knew Grandma and Pappy were coming. So they were all excited. So I had to get them through breakfast, which we won't go into what through breakfast means, and get them dressed. And with three boys, you know, I won't go there either. And so we'd get them ready, and they'd be on the sofa, and we'd start a show, but they knew at any minute Grandma and Pappy would be pulling in. So they would get up on the back of the sofa, and we're talking 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, and they'd lean as far as they could over the back of the sofa to look, they have a bi-level, look down the window to see if they had pulled up yet. Well, maybe the first time, no, the second time, no, but about the third time, I hear them pounding on the window and waving, because Grandma and Pappy were there. So then they would come in and sit on the sofa with them and finish the show. And these shows for great-grandparents are like nothing they ever watched or had their kids watch. I mean, they aren't Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse, believe me. But they would suffer through the show with the kids, and then they would read them a book, and then Dad would be worn out, and he'd say, okay, we're going to leave now. Aiden would tear down the stairs out the front door because Pap left him do something that we were never allowed to do, and I don't think he even let the granddaughters do. He would open his vehicle door, and Aiden would get in. He would turn on everything that it was possible to turn on. And I'm thinking, and you're okay with this? He would have the radio blaring and the air conditioner on and the four ways on. And I'd hear my dad say, Pappy doesn't even know how to do that himself. And then, of course, they would get ready and leave. So I always had that memory when I went and sat down on their sofa who had been there with them. Well, see, I have to leave that now. That room is not available. They settled Friday, somebody else's house. If I use my key, which I have to give back to you, and go in that house, I would be arrested. Okay, that is, I cannot go back there, but that memory is still mine. I don't have to give up the memory. I just have to give up the piece of furniture and the room. Okay? So changes and transitions and giving up things in the past are very difficult to do. Very difficult. I completely understand that. All right, so this morning I want to talk about two examples from the Word of fathers exhorting, encouraging, and imploring. So two biblical characters, two stories. So the first one is Noah. So we have the biblical account, but then we have all the versions that people have used to tell the basic story. So the one is Evan Almighty. Anybody see Evan Almighty? Steve Carell is an executive at a company, and animals start showing up. They fly in his window. They follow him to work. He looks out his window at home, and there are raccoons and beavers and all kinds of things. Okay? To obey God was very costly. He lost his job. He lost his reputation. His family was like, Dad is nuts. He and his wife split up. Very costly sometimes to obey God. So then we had the VeggieTale version with the three boys and then another three in another family and a baby who likes the bright lights on the TV. I see more cartoons in VeggieTales than I thought I ever would at 60 years old. But in the VeggieTale version, and I have to think this is partially true. That's why I enjoy those. Okay? So in this one, the son just got married. Well, we know he had how many sons? Three. And that they were married. It doesn't mention that they had any kids yet, but don't you think that those sons had plans? See, I didn't think of that before I saw this VeggieTales show. They and their wives probably had decided what their occupations were going to be. I mean, there weren't all the choices back then that there are now, but they had to decide on an occupation. They had to build their dwelling. They had to decide where they were planting their garden. So in this VeggieTales show, this one had just got married, and dad's telling them what God wants to do. He's like, nope, not going to happen. I know where my garden's going to be, up there in the hills where I'm going to build my house. I have my plans, and I don't like dad's plan or God's plan. But he scrambled up the ark when the sky opened up. And so don't you think part of that is true, that God spoke to Noah, then Noah had to try to convey that to his family, and then not think he's crazy? Because realize now, this boat was nowhere close to water where they could just slide it into the Mediterranean. Okay? How are you going to get that boat into water? And many theologians believe it didn't rain at that point. They believe that the earth was covered with a circle of water and that we just had mist and dew, and that's how things got water. Because it talks about God opening the fountains below and water coming up and opening the heavens and letting the water come down. So his family had to choose to obey what God was saying, what Dad was saying that God said. Very interesting. As Pastor Kurt reminded us with the story of King Saul and that he only obeyed partially, there are consequences to not obeying God. So there are costs to obey. There are consequences to not obey. If his family hadn't believed him, if that last son had not gotten on the boat, I mean, how crazy is it to say God's going to bring every living animal to our yard and it's going to walk into the ark? Yeah, okay, sure, Dad. Yeah. Have you seen Dr. Smith in a while? Did you go off your medicine? Okay. Some of the consequences to not completely obeying does not always mean that you'll be punished, but it means you'll miss opportunities because you're living beneath where God intended you to go. You're living beneath where God intended you to go. And many times we don't even know the joys and the pleasure that would come into our life if we did completely obey. Because think about King Saul. If he had completely obeyed, he might have had a completely different outcome. Completely different outcome. And thank the Lord that many times he gives us a second or third chance to obey. We may have missed it the first time, but he gives us a second or third chance. At some point, the chances run out because there isn't time to obey. And God has to do something else, just like Saul, then he raised up David. Okay, so one more biblical example here. The Israelites. So the Israelites are in Egypt, as you know, they came down with Joseph, eventually. And they lived there, and they eventually became slaves in the land that once brought them life and provision. They moved there so they could survive, and they prospered. It said God was with them, and they prospered, and they were so fruitful, as far as children that it scared the Egyptians. That's how we get the whole Moses story. The Egyptians are like, if they keep this up and they, each family has 7 or 8 kids every year, they're going to soon outnumber us. So all the boys are going to be killed upon birth. And they can just keep girls because without the guys, they're not going to be. Yeah, you got that, right? I don't have to explain that to you. And so that's how Moses ended up in the basket. Okay. So anyway, then Moses is grown now, and he goes out and he sees an Egyptian mistreating a Jew, and he kills the Egyptian. Don't you think if you were helped that you wouldn't be grateful? Yay, that guy's not going to mistreat us anymore. They're like, what did you just do? Then he sees 2 Jews fighting. So Justin and Stanley are going at it. And I'm like, guys, separate, separate. And they said, who made you our boss? So he says, okay, well, if they don't want my help and they don't recognize what I want to do, I'll just move out to the desert. So he's out there 40 years, folks, not a year or two. 40 years he's out there, and a bush is burning. So, oh yay, one of my bushes is on fire. Now God is going to speak to me and disrupt my whole life. So God says, I have an assignment for you. Well, he's a biblical character, so don't you expect his reaction to be, yay, God has an assignment for me. Well, he's a biblical character that we all look up to. You mean he wasn't excited to become the deliverer of a nation? He's like, yeah, God, that bush must have been for somebody else. I'm sorry, I tuned into the wrong channel. I'll just walk away and pretend that didn't happen. So God tells him why he needs to do this assignment. So then he says, yeah, and you forget that I get nervous in front of people and stutter. You definitely aren't asking me to go and speak in front of Pharaoh and tell the Israelites I'm there to save them, because I tried that and it didn't work. They rejected me. I am not going back to where I was rejected. Come up with another plan. Did the Heavenly Father let that happen? So then he tries his third try. Well, how about Aaron or Miriam? Let my family member, right? Okay. So he goes, and when he arrives at the scene and he says, God sent me and I'm your deliverer, did they all stand up and clap and cheer and say, he's here, he's here? He didn't, Marty. They didn't do that. Really? So they didn't recognize God's plan or God's calling. They thought, just like I'm thinking Noah's family did, they thought this was Nutty Dad's idea. The Israelites thought, this is this Moses who thinks he's high and mighty because he was raised in the castle or the pyramid or temple or whatever it was. So he was raised in there and he thinks he's high and mighty and now he's going to tell us what to do. It wasn't Noah's plan. It was God's plan. It wasn't Moses' plan for sure. It was God's plan. So then he gets this crew. Eventually they decide to go where he's going. And he says, God has over here this promised land. Okay. We call it the promised land, like that's almost the name of it. Okay. This is Ecuador. This is Argentina. This is Germany. This is the promised land. Okay. Do you realize the promised land meant all the promises that God made to you are going to be answered there? That's why it's the promised land. It will be where there's fruit and honey and You won't be slaves anymore. Okay. There is where we need to head. So they leave slavery and they go into the desert, and they're just so thankful and excited that Moses got them out of Egypt. Right? They weren't, Jack? What is with this? Huh? So they're out there in the desert, and you know what they say to him? Why did you bring us here? Now, wait a minute. Did Moses bring them there? Or did God bring them there? Because when we lived here, we were slaves, but they provided us food every day. And they provided us water every day. Yes, we worked ourselves to the bones, but now we're over here with you, and we can't find water. We're thirsty. Why aren't you giving us something to drink? And now we ate all the food we brought with us. So now we're out here. Now we don't even have food. We're going back over there. We liked it over there. We grew up over there. We had kids over there. We have memories over there. We're going over there. So Moses prays to God. I don't even think I want to describe the bird story. So I think we'll skip that. So finally they got manna. That was God's answer, not Moses's. And they were like, I am so excited to go out every morning and pick cornflakes off the ground. Well, I don't think that was their response, was it? Because in a little while, they were like, okay, I had manna meatloaf. I had manna with tomato sauce. I had scrambled manna. I had oatmeal manna. I am manned out. Moses, you need to give us something else. Moses' answer was, when God wants to give you something else, God will give you something else. So you realize that I'm talking about spiritual mothers and fathers. They come alongside to encourage, exhort you to go forward, and sometimes implore you to keep moving forward. Moses had to do that with them over and over and over. So now we're out in the desert for what was probably a 2 or 3 week journey. If they decided to mosey and relax, it might have been a month, 6 weeks. How long were they in that desert? How long were they not receiving God's promise? Excuse me? Come on. 40 years. You mean 40 weeks. 40 months. 40 years. Really? Mikey, 40 years. Why did it take them 40 years to make a couple week journey? God was trying to get them out of the slave mentality, to get them out of the idea that they ruled their lives and they made their decisions, to where it was that God wanted to change them. They were a chosen nation. So they start to work that out. They start to get that idea. So then they said, hey, Mike and Marlon, you two guys, sneak into the promised land, because God said, this is where all of our promises are. And come back and give us a report. And they come back and they say, you should have seen the fruit. You should have seen the honey. Sonny could have eaten off of that for the rest of his life and not even have to garden and plant 500 different crops in their backyard. And everyone they've shared with me has been so good. And I understand I might be getting some more today. So, if his wife remembered. And all of that is just behind the TV, right over there. But Oh, there has to be a but. But there are people over there, there are situations that we have to defeat. Yeah, Moses, fighting, swords. I'm not really into that. I think we'll just stay here in the desert. Because we don't have the faith or the courage to go in there. Ouch. 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 So God said, okay. I don't know if I would have said okay. But he was like, if that's your decision, you can keep going around those same mountains. This year, next year, you now have made a rut. You've gone around that mountain so many times. You know every pebble. You know where to put your tent up. You just are so enjoying the routine. Nothing is changing. You're getting used to where to find everything. You know where the bathrooms are. You don't even have to redig the latrines. They're there your next time around. And so, 40 years. Folks, come on. I don't want to be circling a mountain in my life for 40 years. I don't have another 40 years. I hit the big 6-0. And had to have some wonderful tests done this week since I hit the big 6-0. Whoopee! So I think through the last three messages. Pastor Kurt did not know what I was going to share. Van did not know what I was going to share. I didn't know what they were going to share. But 2 weeks ago, because I knew what this week was going to be like, I knew what helping Adam and Becky move and unpack was going to be like. I started this message 2 weeks ago. As a father versus a friend or teacher. Exhort, encourage, implore. I know more than that. I didn't know where I was taking it. But I think God is saying, it's your choice. You can choose to go back to Egypt, where it's easier. You can choose to stay in the desert and keep circling the mountain. Or you can say, I believe that's where God wants me to go. It's not going to be easy. I have to leave the desert. I have to leave Egypt. I have to start heading this direction. And if I hit an obstacle, I have to believe that God can help me defeat that. So Marty, they did eventually, didn't they? But that original entire generation that left Egypt died in the desert. They never saw the fulfillment of God's promises in their lives because they made that choice to not follow God where he was going. So, I am just so thrilled and excited over these last three messages. They've been so encouraging and uplifting. I can't wait to come back next Sunday. So, I want to remind you, not my idea. I don't make a list of what I want to preach about. In fact, I just read through the next section in my series. I didn't even say, God, where in the Bible do you want me to land? These were the next four verses. Okay. So instead of complaining about Moses, you can complain to God all you want this week. Please don't let Pastor Steve give any more of those kind of messages. All right. Because they had to understand that they belonged to God. They had to believe that God had their best interest in mind. They had to understand that they belonged to this family, this nation. They had to become what God wanted them to become and not stay being who they presently were. Because we all love change. And then that changed how they behaved. Because they had to behave differently over there than they did in the desert. Couple quick reminders, and then we're going to close. There are costs to obeying God. Things we need to lay down, things we need to pick up and embrace. It's a journey and an adventure that requires that we move forward. Requires that we move forward. All right. Okay, so there's a lot of ways that we can respond to this kind of a message. You know that God knows each of you so intimately that He can have us do something on a Sunday morning that may only be for one or two or three of you. Like the prophetic word that we had. That wasn't the whole church going to stand up and say, yep, that's me. I have one of those. Okay? But God wanted to speak to two or three of you. So in this, hopefully you saw believe, belong, become, behave.